From the studios of Boise State Public Radio, I'm Gemma Gaudette. On Tuesday, we told you Idaho was being sued by the Justice Department over its abortion law. Now, this is the first major legal action the federal government has taken against a state over abortion laws following the U.S. Supreme Court's ruling in June that overturned Roe v. Wade. Now, in this lawsuit, Attorney General Merrick Garland says Idaho's 2020 abortion law would violate a federal law that applies to hospitals that receive Medicare funding. So here to break down the federal lawsuit against Idaho's abortion law is Shakira Sanders, a professor at the University of Idaho and a visiting professor at Penn State Dickinson Law. We should say she is a law professor at the University of Idaho. She is also joined by Boise State Public Radio reporter James Dawson. I want to thank both of you for being here.
Thank you for having me, as always.
Thanks.
So, Shakira, let's start with you. Can you break down why the federal government is suing Idaho over abortion, and I guess why they chose Idaho to be this, I guess, kind of first test case?
Well, I can tell you what the content of the federal government's lawsuit filed this week is, which is essentially that there is a federal law that requires hospitals and medical providers that receive federal funds to protect health by providing stabilizing treatment. And what the federal government's allegation is that Idaho's 2022 or Idaho's trigger laws only allow abortion to the extent that it protects life, not necessarily health. And that if in cases of rape or incest where that has been reported. So according to the federal government, there is a conflict between federal law and Idaho law, and under Article 6, Clause 2 of the U.S. Constitution, federal law is supreme, and therefore Idaho's law is preempted to the extent that it applies to hospitals and medical providers that receive federal funds.
So, Shakira, what exactly is EMTALA, and why is it coming up now?
One, obviously, it's coming up now because there's this huge question about the health consequences of disallowing abortions. I don't know if many of your listeners were alive prior to Roe versus Wade, but one of the contextual things to understand about that case is that there was a fairly significant health crisis occurring around the country in places where women were unable to obtain the procedure. And so with the Supreme Court's overturning of Roe versus Wade, there appears to be a lot of concern that we could have another health crisis. And there are federal laws that apply to medical providers that receive federal dollars. And therefore, this is one of the approaches that the Biden administration seems to think is a viable option with regards to securing not just the life of a pregnant person, but their health as well.
Hmm. Well, and we should note that this law went into effect in 1986, and it's basically remained an unfunded mandate as of now, but it is on the books, correct, Shakira?
Yes, it is on the books. And as I said, you had a number of, at the time this law was passed, I think there were also concerns about individuals receiving treatment, even if they didn't have insurance. So this is not a law that only applies in this context. This is part of a broad range of federal regulation to dictate the spending of federal dollars.
So Shakira, I know this is kind of, guesstimating here, but in your opinion, what do you see the Biden administration hoping to accomplish with this lawsuit against Idaho?
Well, first, let me say I am not on the president's text chain message, so I am not sure if the administration hopes to do anything other than probably what the president promised during the campaign, which is to protect the right of choice when it comes to viable or unwanted pregnancies. And so with the Supreme Court's overturning of Roe versus Wade, that leads to new theories with regards to how to protect that right. And to the extent that there is a conflict between Idaho's law and the federal law, this could be a place where the administration could have a win.
So can we, I guess we can say that the lawsuit against Idaho is a test case for the Biden administration, because there are other states that have similar abortion bans on the books like Idaho's. Mm-hmm. So I guess why choose Idaho first?
Well, it may have been a political calculation, which I'll freely admit is a little bit beyond my expertise. Mm-hmm. There could have been other issues at play with regards to the distinctions between Idaho's law and the laws of other states. It could also just be a signal to other states that this is sort of where we're starting, not exactly where we plan to end.
And Jimmy, with that said, let's talk about Idaho leaders' reaction to this lawsuit. What did we hear from Governor Brad Little?
Oh, basically that, you know, this is a complete federal overreach. Attorney General Lawrence Wasden called it, totally political. As to the last point, as to why this, you know, Idaho might have been chosen first, mm-hmm. Attorney General Merrick Garland was asked that during the press conference announcing the suit. He didn't say too much, but he essentially said that, Idaho's law specifically, contradicts this federal statute on its face, essentially. So maybe it was the lowest hanging fruit. I don't know. It's just kind of interesting, since the DOJ sent a letter to Governor Brad Little, I believe on, July 27th, which was a Friday, and demanded, them respond, or July 29th, I should say, demanded they respond to that letter by August 1st. So they had the weekend, and then they filed the suit on August 2nd, just a few days after they sent that letter, even though they kind of knew that, this law was going into effect ever since the U.S. Supreme Court, issued its ruling in late June.
So, Jimmy, we know what Governor Little said. You mentioned what Attorney General Lawrence Wasden said. Did we hear from other GOP leaders about the federal government suing Idaho?
Oh, similar things from the state Republican Party, essentially saying, stay out of our business. The U.S. Supreme Court, already ruled on this. They gave us the power to do it. It's no secret that Idaho has a long history of, calling out what they see as federal overreach. They kind of want the state to be left alone when it comes to, enacting and enforcing their own laws. So that was the general sentiment of what we saw.
And we should make a note for you that we will hear some reaction from Democratic lawmakers in Idaho later on in the show. We've also been inviting Republican lawmakers to come on the program to talk about their reaction. So we're going to hope to be able to bring that to you next week, because we do want to hear from both sides. Let me reintroduce both of you if you are just joining us. We're talking with Shakira Sanders. She is a law professor at the University of Idaho. She's also a visiting professor right now at Penn State Dickinson Law School, along with Boise State Public Radio reporter James Dawson. We're talking about the Biden administration suing Idaho over our state's abortion ban. So, Shakira, what was your reaction when you heard the Biden administration was suing Idaho over its abortion law? And your reaction from a legal standpoint, because I do think Jimmy makes a very good point in the sense that, Idaho has kind of a don't tread on me attitude, in the sense of leave us alone, let us do our own thing, a very independent spirit in a way. And we're also a small state.
Well, first, let me say, I think every state to some degree has this sort of leave me alone attitude, especially with regards to what president is or what administration is in power at the time, right? Certainly with some federal administrations, Idaho is very helpful and is less standoffish. And I would say that that's true of every state. Here, I would say my initial reaction, thinking from a constitutional law perspective, is I wonder if this will be a case that the U.S. Supreme Court will ultimately end up hearing, considering the issues are federal in nature, and this is a lawsuit filed in federal court. And I think it'd be very curious. You know, the preemption doctrine is not the sexiest of constitutional law topics, and rarely does it intersect with these type of personal individual rights. However, recently we have seen some intersection with this preemption doctrine in First Amendment law. And so I do wonder if we will see consistency from the court if it should take a case like this, or if we will now see the preemption doctrine becoming more muddled as it relates to this particular issue.
And Shakira, we do probably need to note that just because the U.S. Supreme Court makes a ruling, in this case, overturning Roe versus Wade, that's not always the end of the story. I mean, it's not like we wrap it up in a nice bow and move on. And this is exactly what we're seeing with this federal lawsuit. Mm-hmm. So is this federalism and our legal system at work?
To some degree, yes. One of the core tenets of U.S. constitutional law is that our state governments and our federal governments coexist. And to the extent that our Constitution gives certain limited rights to government, the federal government in particular, the remaining rights are left to the states. But rarely is it as simple as that, merely for one reason being that we have a vast amount of federal spending that comes to states, and states agree to follow federal law when they take money. But I also think this underscores the other element of federalism, which is between individuals and any government, be it state or federal government. And sort of where are the fault lines? Where do these fault lines exist? Finally, I'll say that many state Supreme Courts have a lot of big decisions on their hands, as we saw yesterday morning with our own state Supreme Court grappling with where these constitutional individual rights lie. But as we can see, there's always this intersection of our state law and our federal law, and that's not going to go away.
And Jimmy, can we be clear on which particular law the federal government is suing Idaho over? Because as you and I talked about in our last segment, there are three lawsuits against the state of Idaho right now from Planned Parenthood. The federal government is not suing Idaho over all three of these.
Correct. Yeah, they're targeting the 2020 trigger law, which, you know, essentially is kind of the granddaddy law of them all, which would ban all abortions except in cases of rape, incest, or the life of the mother is threatened.
And so then, Jimmy, do we have any idea what's next with this federal lawsuit?
Oh, man, I sure wish I knew. But, you know, essentially, they're asking for at least, you know, a temporary stay, if not a permanent injunction to block that law from taking effect. I really do wonder what the interplay is going to be, you know, with the state Supreme Court handling those three lawsuits plus this one. You know, are they going to kind of wait for one another to issue some rulings since the state cases are a little bit further ahead than this one? I don't know. And maybe Shakira has some insight on that, but it's certainly going to be fascinating.
Well, and Shakira, let's talk about that a little bit, because I'm also kind of curious, I guess, as Jimmy mentioned, you know, could there be a stay put in place because of this federal lawsuit? Who makes that decision because this is the federal government. So I guess how does the process work?
Well, one thing to understand with these two bodies of lawsuit is that they're in separate courts. The Department of Justice's lawsuit is in federal district court, whereas Planned Parenthood's lawsuits are in state court. And those are completely separate sovereigns. Those courts do not have to wait for each other, and their opinions are not binding on each other because one is a state court and one is a federal court. With regards to the timeline for the federal litigation brought by the Department of Justice, I would suspect that there be a hearing fairly soon on issues related to either a temporary restraining order or a permanent restraining order. But then after that, you will probably hear motions from Idaho to dismiss the lawsuit, which I don't have a prediction on which way that will go, but it seems very likely that this lawsuit is headed for what is known as summary judgment, which is whether or not there are genuine issues of fact or law. And this seems to be a purely legal question that the Department of Justice has raised to the federal courts, that of preemption.
So, Shakira, could a federal judge then potentially put a stay in place, even though it's not in a state court? So, because federal law can supersede state law.
Yes, if you'll remember, we've seen this before where a federal judge has enjoined Idaho state law. We saw it in the same-sex marriage litigation, but we've seen it in other litigations. So federal courts do have power to enjoin states but one thing to understand is that the Department of Justice's lawsuit is one based on the U.S. Constitution. And that reigns supreme, which gives the federal judge the ability to enjoin the law. But that decision does not have to be based on anything dealing with the state court proceedings.
Okay. So there's so much to take in on how all of this works. And before we let both of you go, I mean, Jimmy, your reaction when this federal lawsuit was filed, because you were literally getting ready to come on to Idaho Matters to talk about the Idaho Supreme Court case. And man, this seems to have just muddied the waters even more in a way.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, just so many considerations that, come into play, whether or not the federal court's going to stay this, whether the state Supreme Court's going to stay this, what if they both stay it? And if they don't, then, I mean, these laws are set to go into effect, one on August 19th and the other on August 25th. So, I mean, mm-hmm. the clock is ticking on this. So, you would think that the respective courts would be able to, figure out some sort of decision, whether it's a temporary or a permanent one, somewhere within that timeline. I would imagine that they're feeling the pressure. I don't know whether or not they'd let that influence them if they were trying to come up with some sort of super reasoned decision, but, it has to be a factor.
And Shakira, as Jimmy mentioned, one of these laws is set to go into effect on August 19th. That's 15 days from now. The next two, August 25th. That is literally 3 weeks from today. What is the likelihood that a federal court would listen to our arguments from the federal government quickly? Because, I mean, the clock is literally ticking down.
Yes, well, I don't really have any insider knowledge on sort of the caseloads that currently exist for the District of Idaho. We do know that we're down a judge to the extent that we have not gotten a pick from President Biden to replace former Chief Judge Windmill, who retired last year. Of course, I am also very much keeping in mind that Idaho has yet to have a woman Article III judge appointed to a lifetime position. And of course, on an issue like this, it seems pretty significant to take note of that. But I can say from my former experience clerking in a federal district court is that any judge has the ability to set a hearing fairly quickly and have the parties come in to give arguments, especially in this world of Zoom, fairly quickly. And so it's probably just a matter of the court figuring out the proper time on its calendar to have a conference with the attorneys and set up some of these preliminary hearing dates.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's safe to say that this is just the beginning of this, and there will be so much more to come. Appreciate both of your insight and expertise in this. We've been talking with Shakira Sanders, a law professor at the University of Idaho, as well as a visiting professor at Penn State Dickinson Law School, along with our own Boise State Public Radio reporter, James Dawson. We've been discussing the Biden administration suing Idaho over our state's abortion ban. I want to thank you both again for breaking this down, and I know we will be checking back in with both of you again. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me, as always.